Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod, Game 4 After Show. I'm Ryan Eichten. With me tonight is Leo Sun out on the West Coast at an appropriate time to be awake. Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. There's probably a lot of Laker fans, aka Warrior fans, who just kind of double as both, you know, whoever's still in the playoffs that are still up watching this game. And so it was quite fun to be able to see that all last 5 minutes withstanding.
Yeah, the last 5 minutes was we were kind of chatting before. I'm not sure there's anything to take away, good or bad, from that stretch, because ultimately they're up by so much. Whatever. But yeah, Wolves win game 4, 117-110, take a commanding 3-1 series lead, have a chance to close it out game 5 at home. That'll be especially important because if disaster strikes and they do lose that game, that opens the door for Curry to come back. It prolongs the series by 4 days, I think, is almost the bigger. I'm kind of like dubious that Curry will even be ready by game 6, but we'll see what they say on Wednesday. But it prolongs the series 4 days. It would have been 3 days, but the Valkyries play on whatever day that would be to push it back a day. So, like, I was looking at the schedule, and it's game 6 would be the same day as, like, a lot of the other game 7s. I think Denver-OKC game 7 would be that same day. So you go from, you lose all, like, rest advantage, even if you are able to win game 6. Yeah, tonight, Wolves, kind of similar, not quite as bad as the first half of game 3, but the first half of game of this game tonight was pretty rough. The offense was better, but the defense was just not, given the state of the Warriors roster, was just not good enough. And then they have basically the best quarter in playoff quarter in the history of the Minnesota Timberwolves, outscored the Warriors by 22. And like we said, I don't even know what word you want to describe the end of the game, but They went on a 17-0 run to start the third quarter, and it was basically over from there. Leo, big picture thoughts, small picture thoughts, what you got?
Yeah, I mean, that first half, I mean, was the Julius Randle show. He was hitting all kinds of crazy shots. I mean, this is the Julius Randle that a lot of Wolves fans thought that they would be getting when he came over from New York. I mean, he's a lot more ISO-heavy scoring, back and down, hitting middies, that type of stuff. And he was hitting all kinds of, you know, buzzer-beating shots, and I think that low-key kind of set the Wolves up for failure because Steve Kerr, I mean, credit to him, he adjusted and went to the zone, the dreaded zone that the Wolves hate playing against. And that kind of played against the Wolves' hand because Randle had the ball a lot, and the way that he plays is very much like, hey, let me kind of analyze what's in front of me, take a couple seconds, and then go. And that does not work in a zone where you need to play fast. And so just playing without any pace, it really looked like the Wolves are playing on like 0.75 speed out there. Just the way that they were moving and the way that they were just not reacting quickly enough. And again, you know, you do have to criticize Julius Randle and even Anthony Edwards to some extent. And luckily Ant hit that, you know, pull up three from just past half court over two defenders that made it seem somewhat respectable given how dreadful that last like 7 minutes of that first half was. And coming up in that third quarter, you said it, Ryan, it was probably one of the best playoff quarters the Wolves have ever played. I mean, Ant was absolutely on fire. He hit 5 or 6 shots in a quick stretch, including two just like bomb heat check threes. And at that point, I mean, you could just tell the Warriors are like, we don't know, we can't throw a zone at that. And their whole matchup got kind of jumbled, and you know, really the rest of the team showed up. I mean, I think Dante hit a huge three and then drew a charge right after. Jaden was making plays. Julius Randle, you know, after he got pulled early in that second half, came back in and played pretty well as well, kind of fit back in and bullied down low. And so you just really got all of it. I put on the Wolves, on the Kennes Hoopis Blue Sky, that it felt like this is the perfect form of the Wolves in that third quarter. I mean, you have Ant hitting from deep. You had the secondary players coming in, hitting from deep as well, chipping in, and Julius Randle's kind of bruising them in low. Like, that's what you want to see. While Rudy Gobert, I mean, wasn't as present, but he was still steady on the defensive end. And the only thing I'll say about that fourth quarter was really that, you know, I joked about it, but somewhat true, is that this is probably a good thing for the Wolves. I mean, if you try and take it in context of that, the series isn't over. They still have another game left. I can very much see the Wolves like feeling just too good about themselves going into the fifth game, saying like, you know what, we won by like 25, 30. Like, you know, it's easy. I'm just going to bomb from three, you know, whatever, and just play loose heading into game 5, which, you know, may or may not be the best thing. And so Finch is definitely a light a fire under them, I would assume, during film study. tomorrow, because a lot of the players are making a lot of those mistakes at the end. I mean, those were your Naz Reeds. They were your even the Keel, for as good of a game he had, you know, had some mistakes. Dante just couldn't seem to bring the ball up or pass it correctly. So it was a little obviously annoying, but at the end of the day, you know, it was pretty much a comfortable win all in all in that second half.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a big reason why that down the stretch happened was that they didn't want to play Mike because he was approaching 30 minutes. And I just think it probably wasn't even about his minutes total. Just like they had the game in hand. Let's sit down the 30 plus year old and get him some time on the bench. And they sat down Ant as well. That's foul probably trouble. Just a minute.
Yeah.
Foul trouble, minutes restriction, all of that. But they basically didn't have, like, their two ball handlers were Nikhil and Dante out there. Like, I think that was a big part of it. It's not to, like, excuse the down-the-stretch play, but it is what it is. But, yeah, you talked about, I thought Ant was pretty brutally bad for the first quarter and a half-ish of the game. Pretty similar to game one. He was just, the defense, I don't quite remember if it was this bad in game three, but I thought Ant's defense in the first half of the game was pretty atrocious. It's always hard to tell who's playing well defensively other than like the main defensive guys live, but I'm sure he did a better job defensively in the second half. And like you mentioned, the 3-point flurry down the stretch of the first half and to open the second half was when the Wolves put the game away. So they're down four with a minute left and Ayn hits a three and then hits the one you mentioned, the buzzer beater. So it's two straight threes to close the half. And then, oh, midway through the third quarter, hits three more threes, and they're up 12, and they kind of pull away from there. Dante hits a three to put them up 15. They don't that so with 4:18 left in the third quarter, they hit their final 3-pointer of the game, which is interesting. But the Wolves made 16 of their first 30 3-pointers in this game, which is obviously such a stark difference from going 0-16 in the first half of game one. This is to me the first like good 3-point shooting game they've had since like game one of the Lakers series. They've had like adequate, like what they shot mid 30s last game, that's just fine. But like the first game where you just go, oh, they won that game because they bombed away from three, which this roster has the ability to do. Obviously, Ant 6 of 11 stands out, but Randall hit 4 of 8, Naz, only one of three. Dante hit 2 of 4, which is like at
that's
this point
by his standards.
Yeah, he just Nikhil hit his one attempt. It's just been good to see that. The poor 3-point shooting, I think, was a momentary blip on the. I mean, it's just like it's. I know people like don't like to evaluate sports this way, but like it's just such a low sample size, even one game, like. We can talk about the lottery later, but I was just kind of thinking about like it's just like I know people think it's rigged, but like 1.5% hitting is not that big of a like a thing. Like I don't know. So I think it's been good to see that it was just like a momentary two game stretch lapse of 3-point shooting, and they've if there was any mental factor to it, they've seemingly brushed it off.
Yeah, I mean, 16 of 34 is obviously a good night compared to the 8 of 27 for the Golden State Warriors. But, I mean, you know, Julius was obviously hot in the first half, and Ant was hot in that second half. So they definitely shot above average. But, I mean, look at the rest of them, like you said. I mean, Dante, 2 of 4. I mean, if you imagine that's something he could do. I mean, Mike Conley's 2 for 6. I mean, how many of his misses were wide, wide, wide open where it's like you expect him to convert closer to a 50, you know, high 40% range instead of 33%? And yeah, Naz had that six step back three that he had at some point in the first half. But outside of that, I mean, he was 0 for 2 as well, too. So, you know, it's not like the Wolves shot alarmingly outlier amount of threes that, you know, went in that they normally don't make. So, you know, I do think it's a repeatable performance for them.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I just meant it was good. Like it was.
Yeah, it was good compared to what they've been doing, right, all series. And so, you know, by the end of it, Julius Randle, Anthony Edwards, you look at their numbers, they had a matching 11 for 21 from the field. If you even include that garbage time in there, they combined for 61 points and they became the first duel of Timberwolves players in the playoffs to score 30 or more, last being KG and Sam Cassell in that 2004 run. So, again, I mean, that's what you really want to see, right? You want to see Ant and Julius lead the team and play controlled. And, you know, Rudy, you know, I don't want to say he had a bad game, but he was mostly invisible for that game. He was really giving up a lot of rebounds, or he just even wasn't on the court to be able to corral a lot of those rebounding issues. They were out-rebounded by 10 in the first half, and I think, you know, he needs to be better there as well, too. It was fun to see Rudy kind of get his at the end. I think in fourth quarter, Draymond tried to drive for a fast break layup, and Rudy just swatted the crap out of it. It was right at the tip of the apex, mm-hmm. and he was kind of complaining afterwards, and you know, there's a lot of fun moments in that. Obviously, in retrospect, looking back, the Wolves won, so we could go back and enjoy it. But I mean, you see a lot of the holes in the Warriors. I mean, nothing here is new. I mean, Brandon Podzinski, 3 of 14, he went 0 of 4. I mean, that's obviously way worse than he normally expects. But I mean, at the same time, you're still getting Jonathan Kuminga, who looks like Kevin Durant out there. I mean, the way that he's playing and finishing, I mean, he finished with just only 23 points, but 11 of 12 from the free throw line. I mean, come on. I mean, is that a sustainable amount for Jonathan Kuminga? Draymond Green also came out, and much was made about his 2-point game he had in game three right there. And game four, mm-hmm. he came out, he took the very first shot, pull up two. And I think that inspired fear in nobody hitting that first shot. Like, oh, is Draymond about to go off? Like, yeah, he hit 2 threes in that first half. I think he was 2 for 2 in that first quarter. And then he finished 0 for 4, finishing 2 of 6 from perimeter for the rest of the game. 2 of those misses being air balls as well, too. So, you know, that's what you want. I mean, we'll live with that. I mean, how many times was I watching that game in the second half where Draymond pulled up for a three? Or Kuminga's pulling up for a long jumper. I was like, dude, we take that. We take that. And they stopped hitting those shots that they were making. I mean, even, Gary Payton III, he also went 1 of 1 from three, or 1 of 2 from three to start the game. And then he finished the rest of the game missing his next 3 shots. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where you believe in a lot of the averages. Yes, the zone defense was a problem. And, you know, they seemingly fixed that by playing a lot faster in that second half. But it played out as, you know, you expect. And Jimmy Butler, you can say whatever you want. Just funny listening to Tim Legler on the national broadcast say that. Playoff Jimmy, he's here when he's taking it. He scores on Jaden twice in a row. And then the second half, when he's not playing well, it's like, you know, Jimmy just doesn't quite look like himself out there tonight, where it's like he never gets any of the blame. And when he is playing well, it's like, oh, well, this is what he does. Or it's like, this man scored 14 points in a must-win game. He went 5 of 9. I mean, he's incredibly passive. That's what we saw in the the rest of the series, aside from game 3, where he really went off. So, you know, I think they fired their best shots. And to be honest, we said it on the broadcast, or I said this on recording after the series preview coming up before game 1, that I said, I think the Wolves are going to give up game 1. And they're going to win the next 4 in a gentleman's sweep. And I'm not saying it's over yet, but we're heading in that direction, Ryan. So, you know, I think I got to, you know, go to Vegas or do something here, because I think I'm onto something.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is the third straight game I'm basically going to, on these post-game pods, that I'm going to say this almost the exact same thing, is the reality of this series without Steph Curry is that the Wolves are just a way, way better team than the Warriors. And it stinks that that is true, but the Wolves have to play a C-minus game to win these games. I thought the Wolves played, if you take out the last 5 minutes, I thought the Wolves played like an A-minus game. Probably. Certainly, I mean, the third quarter is obviously an A+, but like, they just, I was trying to think, like, if the Wolves played the 50th percentile game, like the average game for their roster, I'm not sure the Wolves or the Warriors could even, like, that's just without Curry, they're just, it's not just that, like, any team without their star is going to struggle to win a second round playoff game. If the Wolves didn't have Anthony Edwards, the series would be obviously very difficult for the Wolves to win. But the Warriors specifically are so built around, their offense is so built around that guy, that it's just, it's a reality of the series, and it stinks. Obviously, it stinks most for the Warriors that, like, if Warriors fans want to come and say, like, we would have won this series without Curry, I wouldn't necessarily try to, like, dissuade them of that opinion. I would understand how they would get to that conclusion. My point would just be, like, we don't know. We have no clue what would have happened in the series if Curry, I mean, it's probably likely 2-2. Like, I would say the Wolves win this game, win game 2, and the Warriors win 1 and 3, probably. But, like, we don't know. We don't know. Like, Jaden's guarding a whole different person. Like, there's just no way to know. And that's what stinks the most, and why, like, I wouldn't even, if Warriors fans are pissed and say, like, we would have won, I get, like,
yeah, sure.
That's a fair enough opinion to have. Yeah. And so the Wolves are almost certainly going to move on from the series. They're very likely to win the series, with the most likely scenario in that being that they win game 5 with Curry almost certain. I did, interestingly, from like Warriors media covering this team, one guy said that like if they're down 3-1 like they are now, this was after game one, that maybe there's a scenario where Curry plays game five, just in the sense of like they got nothing to lose.
Right.
I don't think that that's likely, but it's something to keep tabs on. But the Wolves, here's my position on just kind of the injury of it all. The Wolves have nothing to apologize for. They played who they played, but it obviously stinks for the Warriors, but it does stink for the Wolves that they don't really get the full, like we talked about after the Wolves beat the Lakers, like it felt like, especially for you, like we have reached Valhalla. Like
that's
we have,
right.
This, unfortunately, because of the Curry injury, we don't get that same satisfaction. And obviously the Wolves are fortunate that they didn't have to play Curry in the series, but that's the one downside you get.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are fair points, Ryan. And I will say that the Warriors are saying that, we would have won the series had Steph Curry been healthy and Jimmy had not been a little bit nicked up or whatever. Well, yeah, I mean, in what year was that, 2016 when the Warriors played the Cleveland Cavaliers, or was it 2015? LeBron 15. Played without...
16 is the 3-1 comeback.
Right, yeah, where 2015, they played the Cleveland Cavaliers where LeBron was missing Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love in the finals.
Yep.
So you're telling me that they would have won, right? It is what it is. I mean, you can't change a fact and you can complain all you want, but I mean, it goes both ways. And so, it is something where whatever happens moving forward, I mean, the Warriors have kind of put themselves in a tough spot. And they did that when they made that Jimmy Butler trade. And it's not so much that they gave up assets. I mean, yes, we all love ourselves some Maple Jordan over here. But at the same time, I mean, like they didn't give up a ton of value and trade assets, draft assets to be able to get Jimmy Butler. But what they did pay was salary cap. And when they paid for that salary cap, that turned them into we must win now and or next year. And so because of that, Steph Curry, who's clearly still hobbled again, like how many players have come back from a grade one strain, hamstring strain, especially their very first time, in less than a week. I mean, I don't know if that's ever happened. A lot of people have made about it, but say Steph Curry does push and come back. This is a soft tissue injury. I've had soft tissue injuries before. The chance of re-injury is so high. And when you re-injure yourself, it becomes a much longer issue. And so if they're going to push Steph Curry to come back because like, hey, we need to win now, and we dumped all of our chips into Jimmy Butler, that's going to endanger what's really going to happen for them maybe later on in the series. If, say, he plays game five and kind of hobbles through or aggravates it, then he's going to be out for maybe, you know, you're looking at the latter part of this calendar year if he really re-injures that. And so, but they're forced to do that. And so that's kind of, you know, I posted this again on the Candace Hoopas Blue Sky, where it's, I mean, Jimmy Butler's making, what is that, upwards of 50, close to about $60 million, you know, in his contract extension that he has the next 2 years. They don't have that much room to improve the depth around them. And so they kind of have to play now. Now they're going to have to force themselves to potentially, I mean, unrealistically, but potentially play Steph Curry, who's maybe dealing with an injury that's going to limit, you know, what few years he has left in the league. Or, you know, they just have to rest up and like try to heal back, get their looks back next year. So they're in a tough spot.
Yeah. I kind of thinking about it more just sitting here, unless, I mean, if he's like 100% good to go, obviously you play him, but like, I just don't think that's even close to likely.
He's got
to
win
but
three like, in a row. Yeah.
I was thinking like, if he's 50% or whatever, well, you might as well send him out there because you're. And my thing would be like, I don't know, they got to win three in a row.
Right.
Even if he is like somewhat hobbled, I would say like, it might be their best route to just sit him, and you hope for a miracle in game five, and then you have a rested Curry for 6 and 7. I don't know. They're probably just dead in the water, unfortunately. Or fortunately for the Wolves, obviously, unfortunately for the injury of it all. But yeah, I think the interesting thing is Jimmy Butler. Before I dive into Jimmy, this Warriors roster is very, it's similar to the Lakers roster in the sense of, like you talked about the effects of trading for Jimmy, but like, I think you would agree, they had to do that trade. Like their season was dead in the water. Their Curry version of the team was dead in the water. Like they had to make that trade now, like in the extension, that's the part of it that you don't like, but ultimately that is like, Jimmy wouldn't be there if you hadn't offered him in the extension. It did like kneecap the depth of their team, similar to the Luka trade, but I think in the similar vein to the Luka trade, that they just had to do it. And this is the unfortunate side effect. And they'll try to kind of regain some of that depth in the offseason. But thinking about Jimmy, Maybe this is just unfair to him at this point of his career and after taking that tough fall in the Rocket series, but like if I 5 of 9 is like honestly, like if I'm a Warriors fan, that 5 of 9 deserves more criticism than 5 of 19. If you went 5 of 19 or 6 of 7 and 20 or whatever and like went out guns blazing and they just couldn't get it to go because like at this point of his career, like then that's fine. But like he was just so passive, I thought. And again, like that just might, he just might not have it in the tank at this point of his career and with this version of the Warriors. But yeah, I was surprised to see how passive he was, because even in Game 3, he was much more like aggressive. And I was like, the playoff Jimmy narrative was just not there in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how so many of his points now, I mean, relies on, he's a physical player. I mean, he has skill. He does have a mid-range jump shot, and he has a very flat-footed three that he can shoot when he's fairly open or if he's banking them in off one leg. But outside of that, I mean, he's kind of just bull rushing those and kind of a Julius Randle type of fashion, except he doesn't have that same size and doesn't have that same kind of length that Randle does to be able to squeeze those in. I mean, he literally has to score on Jaden by putting his head and going full force, like with a runway into Jaden's chest to get him off him just so he could get up a shot. And you could tell it's, you know, you can call it the injury, you could call it age. It's probably a little bit of all of that. You don't anticipate him getting better. I mean, obviously he'll get more used to playing with Draymond and the rest of the team. I mean, he'll obviously benefit with having Steph back next year, but it is a thing where how much more are you going to get out of Jimmy than what you're seeing right now? I mean, he's being put in a position where, I mean, is he just a glorified Andrew Wiggins at this point? Or, I mean, you could say that Andrew Wiggins might have even been, you know, a better version of Jimmy in some aspect of what type of role that he's playing as a third banana type of thing. And so I don't know. I don't want to give him too much credit because, again, it's been a while since Jimmy has actually played really strong, meaningful, winning basketball. I mean, when was the last time that, you know, he what was it, 2022 when he played the Nuggets, right, in the finals? Was it 23, 22?
23 for the Nuggets. Yeah,
23. And so it's been, now we're going on 2 years now. I mean, he kind of hasn't been there. I mean, he had obviously clearly didn't even physically show up for the Heat. And then now when he's being forced into that role where it's like, all right, Jimmy, put your money where your mouth is. I mean, let's see this. Let's see the bubble Jimmy. It's like he's not there. So it's still going to be delicious for me as a Wolves fan to see him lose and eat shit if that happens in Game 5. But, you know, I will say like my, you know, kind of bullet points that I had for this game is that was such a feel good win. Again, I'll say that with the asterisk of like a minus the final 5 minutes of the game where, you know, Ant got his. Ant's been craving to go off. I mean, he's been like ever since, I mean, he had a huge game 3 and now Game 4. I mean, he goes off for this huge, you know, effort. He's been craving that. Julius Randle, I mean, you could tell, I could tell, and I wrote this out on my notes that it was going to be a good night for Julius Randle when he's like goofing around after getting fouled. I don't know if you saw about one point, I think he got tripped. Wolves are on offense, he gets tripped by, I think, Bajinski or someone, and it falls flat. And then he's on the floor, and you know, they call a foul on the Warriors, and the camera kind of zooms into Julius on the ground, kind of laying down. And then he does his whole, like, you know, when you're a little kid, you're pretending to be asleep, where he just like goes limp and then like kind of lays down, like he's like hurt. And he just pops back up and he's laughing. And I think Julius Randle, I mean, he's such a serious dude that like he gets into his own head sometimes because he feels like everyone's against him. But when he's loose, like that's when he's at his best. Same with Nasri. When he's loose, that's when he's at his best. And so you can tell it's going to be a cool, good night for Julius. And it was. Jaden gets throat punched by Buddy Hield and he kind of retaliates at that, which should have been, you know, flagrant one foul.
Yeah, I was surprised they didn't call that a or intentional or some flagrant on Jaden. Yeah.
Right. Or even a technical or something like something. That. But yeah, I mean, definitely pulled him down. But I mean, Jaden was clearly frustrated because, I mean, Buddy Hield's dribbling like he's the Heisman Trophy, just with one arm out the whole time, like at his neck. And Jaden kind of gets his get back. I mean, Buddy Hield scored 1 point in the or 2 points in the second half, I believe it is. He scored a layup, I think, in the fourth quarter. That was it. He was pretty much shut down. I mean, he was not there. Even Mike Conley had a confident pull-up three in transition early in the game. And then even when the things were kind of sputtering for the Wolves, he drew a smart, you know, shooting foul for three. Again, that was kind of a fortunate foul call for the Wolves. Kind of got bailed out on the swing through there. You know, Naz Reid, I mean, he had a step back three, but that's kind of really all he did. But I did want to shout out Na and Dante, though, because those two have really, really been struggling, you know, especially for the better part of the playoffs. I mean, this run specifically, but Na was huge. I mean, he hit a pull-up three first half. And then he also finished with that tough lay right at the end of the first half buzzer as well, too. He was getting cooked in the paint by Jimmy Butler, by Jonathan Kuminga, but he kind of gave it back in the fourth quarter when the Wolves were finally stretching it out where the Warriors are going to sub all their guys out. It was Nah that was attacking the paint and being the zone breaker. He was one living in the paint, driving full court and laying it up. I mean, again, 5 minutes, last 5 minutes, a little bit of a mess. And even Dante, you know, I said this earlier, but he hit two threes, which feels like probably 10 to him, the way that he's been shooting so far. And so, again, for him to finally get that, you know, I think he had that big three when Ant was going off the third quarter and they drew the offensive foul. I think I mentioned that sequence earlier. I mean, that's huge. I mean, we need Dante back if we want any chance of advancing, one, past the Warriors, but two, any further past that in the conference finals.
Yeah, one last point on the Warriors before we kind of focus on our own team. Before the garbage time, the Warriors were 3 of 21 from 3. And I'm not sure what is like a bigger number, only shooting 21 or only making 3 of them. Like, it's just, they're not, like, I don't, maybe the Wolves are just doing a good job on it, but like, they need Buddy Hield to like hit like 7 threes in one of these games. Like, I don't know, I just, the Wolves probably just took the best punch the Warriors had in game 3 and they were able to play one solid quarter of basketball and win, but the two guys that were fantastic were Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards for the Wolves. Julius Randle, first stretch of the game, he scores, what, 19 points in the first, let's see if I can pull it up, like in the first seven, no, in the first like quarter and a half of the game, he has 19 points and it's just hitting from everywhere, hit one of like just a bomb at the end of the shot clock that was just a heave. And then Ant shows up down the stretch of the first half, and then has the big stretch at the end of the second half, puts them up by 20. Those guys have been the two guys this whole playoff run, really. But like the Randle Renaissance, especially, has been, there are so many points in the season. Like, at the deadline, we were talking about like, well, you don't want to attach a pick to dump Randle, but like, what if you traded Randle and didn't dump anything? Would that be smart? Like, that was like what the conversations were. And now he's been their second best player down this whole stretch. Really, like, Ant, Jaden, and Randle have been the only three guys that have like have played like 35 plus minutes every single game. Everyone else has been mixer match. I don't want to have the offseason conversation right now, but all season we've kind of said it's hard to imagine Nas not being on the team next year. And at this point, it's hard to imagine Julius Randle not being on the team next year. He's opting out, by the way. I don't know if people know that's going to happen. He will opt out of his contract. That was probably always happening, but
right.
Jaden's defense, Kyle Tighe had a good, if not NC-17 tweet. Let me pull it up here because I thought he used to be a writer, and if us Canis guys can know that, but Jaden McDaniels' defense in the second half was the type of shit that you typically have to enter a credit card number to see. Which, I guess, if people don't understand that reference, we'll let you live in your sweet bubble life. I'm not sure I've ever paid for that. I want to rephrase that. I've never paid for that type of stuff. I'm not sure. Maybe that's me and Kyle's age difference. I don't know. Whatever. But yeah, his defense was, I guess, according to Kyle, pornographic. It was that good. But Jaden was phenomenal on defense. Kind of classic Rudy. I saw someone tweet out like he plays with Minecraft arms, which is like basically blocks.
He's stiff, yeah.
Yeah. But the defense is always solid. All the starters plus big. Just like an all around good game. I mean, Nas probably the worst of the eight guys to play, but it's just, they're one game away from the conference finals for the second straight year. They're going to be big favorites on Wednesday night. It's been a ride.
Yeah, they just got to finish the job. You know, it's not over yet. And, you know, this is how I felt. I was very, I had a very business-like approach when it came to the Lakers series. And once we won that, I'm kind of like, whatever, the Wolves going all the way, or I don't care what happens. But, I mean, to be honest, I mean, the Wolves need to maintain that energy. And, again, whether it's them playing like crap and getting chewed out for that last five minutes, in which the Wolves committed 12 turnovers in the fourth quarter. So, pretty amazing. Again, they were all by rotation players. But anyways, that being said, is that, you know, they have one more game. As much as we want to believe that we survived the Warriors' best shot, there's always a chance that Jonathan Kuminga scores 82 points in this next game, or Draymond Green goes down trying to kick somebody or punch someone in the face on the way down. Like, they got to stay ready, and they can't get too ahead of their ahead of themselves, because again, it's still the Warriors, and anything could still happen this last game. So I think if they play well, stay focused, and keep bringing that same confidence going in, I think, you know, they'll be well served.
Yeah, I think the first quarter, first few minutes will be important on Wednesday. Just bury them. If you give them life, maybe they have some stress. Certainly, obviously, you lose the game. And I would still think they will have a pretty darn good chance of winning the series, but you give them life, and at the very least, you extend the series by 4 days. But bury them early, cruise to a win, and then we can all go watch OKC, Denver, and figure out, hopefully that one goes seven, and we can try to see who we're playing. But do you want to spend a couple minutes talking about the draft lottery tonight?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we can. I mean, we'll do a quick hits version of it. I mean, my thoughts of it, for those of you who did not see, this is not an April Fool's joke. The Dallas Mavericks did, in fact, earn the number one overall draft pick with a 1.8% chance to move all the way up and go ahead and feed into the storylines that the narratives, conspiracy theories that Adam Silver had this fix for the Dallas Mavericks after he forced Luka to be traded to the Lakers. But, you know, it is kind of wild to think about when something similar happened. And it's not shot for shot the same, but Anthony Davis also requested a trade and refused to play out his contract with the New Orleans Pelicans and requested and forced himself really to be traded to the Lakers. And before he even got traded, though, before that even happened that summer, the Pelicans hilariously won the draft lottery and got Zion Williamson in that one. And, you know, we all know how that worked out. So it sucks a little bit for the Wolves in terms that the top two picks go to the Dallas Mavericks. The second one goes to the San Antonio Spurs. And so the Mavericks obviously will probably be without Kyrie Irving for the majority of next regular season. And if his rehab goes well, he'll be back for if they make the postseason. But watching Anthony Davis and Cooper Flagg play defense together will be a little bit scary. Again, Cooper Flagg, I know he's unproven in the NBA yet, but I mean, he is by all counts and measurements a solid and very, very good defensive player that should be able to have an impact right away. And so you put those two together with PJ Washington and your Daniel Gafford or, Derek Lively, whoever's still on the team come next season off the bench. I mean, that's going to be a really scary presence in there for them. I don't know if I'm quite ready to crown them as that, but just sucks that the Mavericks are getting kind of rewarded for their ineptitude in trading away Luka and tanking to a place where they just still barely miss the playoffs. And they go on to, you know, earn the number one pick. And the Spurs, again, I'll do my quick thought on them, is that they continue to add to what they get. Obviously, they have Stephon Castle, who's a rookie of the year, De'Aaron Fox, and then they have Devin Vassell, who's a solid role player, and Victor Wembanyama. And so they're going to probably add Dylan Harper, right? It's Dylan, right? Because Ron Harper Jr. is his brother, who's already in the G League right now. But yeah, Dylan Harper will be coming in most likely as a consensus number two pick. But I think a lot of the headlines we're thinking about with Giannis announcing that he's open to talking to other teams about potential trade requests is that are the Spurs going to set the record with the most wingspan ever on a team and try and trade whatever assets, whether it's your draft pick or whether it's Vassell or maybe it's Castle or whoever, to bring in Giannis? And that would be pretty scary when you think about Giannis and Wemby sharing the floor with whoever's left on that team.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts and I'll try to keep them brief, but one, the Eastern Conference is a dumpster fire and just continues to be. We'll see what, unfortunately, Jason Tatum's injury. It's hard to know what that's going to be like. There's a non-zero chance that that was an Achilles tear, and the Celtics are a significantly different team next year. Saw some people saying like that seemed like a lot more pain than the normal Achilles tear. It's not worth speculating beyond that. But certainly didn't look good there. Obviously, even if Giannis stays in Milwaukee, Milwaukee's not going to be a championship contender next year with Dame being out, but it's a half-decent chance that Giannis is out the door, and it seems like all the suitors are in the West, so just another. And then, so now, like you said, the top two picks are in Dallas and San Antonio. And I will say for the Mavericks fans, I'm happy for them. The Luka trade is like the worst thing that has almost ever happened to the fan base. But the front office deserves none of this.
Right.
And deserve has nothing to do with it. It's a random lottery. And so my thoughts, I know you touched on it, and I don't know if you wanted to go into the conspiracy of it, but I think you didn't because you knew my thoughts on it, which were, it's not rigged. I'm sorry, it's not. It's fun to joke about, and if you want to get your jokes off, that's completely fine. It's not rigged. I tweeted it out. Go watch the very boring lottery of it. The Mavericks needed four separate balls to come up in a specific order for them to win the lottery. I don't know how you'd ring it. I know people want to speculate on the accounting firm. That would jeopardize their whole business model if they were to rig an NBA draft. Like, it just would. I know, like, people are tweeting out, like, their crappy history of, like, subverting government laws. Like, unfortunately, that is more commonplace than going and doing the exact opposite thing you were paid to do. It's not how it works. And as far as, like, the Mavs of it all, they were a game away from the playoffs. If there was some backdoor deal to trade Luka to the Lakers and give them the first overall pick, well, Anthony Davis scoring 40 points in a play-in game almost ruined that plan by they almost made the playoffs. And then the last thing I saw was like, oh, the top three being Dallas, San Antonio, and Philly had a 0.01% chance. Okay, let me do this experiment. I got up on Google a random number generator that goes from 1 to a million. I'm going to hit generate. The number I got was 286,653. There was a 1 in a million chance that 286,653 came up, and it hit. So are we saying that Google's random number generator is rigged? No. My point is, you could have done that with every single scenario. Any single scenario of 1 through 3, 1 through 4 was going to have an infinitesimally small percentage odds. It's just like the definition of confirmation bias to pick out. And I get it. I get that. Like, I even tweeted out, like, it's not rigged, but damn sure the way it rolled out made it look like it. And yeah. I get, and certainly like the comparisons to the New Orleans winning the Zion lottery are there too. I want people to like really, if again, jokes are fine, but like people to sit down and really like think critically about it. The problem is because like, I kind of think the first one with Ewing back in the 80s, late early 90s, that one might have been rigged. That one had a chance because it was just envelopes. Yeah, just envelopes. That one, if you want to go down that conspiracy, I'll let you.
You allow
but
that
the, now that they do it with like a ping pong ball machine and like a real, no, it's
people,
not.
They,
like,
they have media members there. Yeah, it's like, it's a whole
like,
thing.
I mean, think about like, if you watch the Oscars, there's a similar like accounting firm that runs that. And like, it was a big deal when they announced the wrong winner. I'm pretty sure that accounting firm was not hired back the following year after doing it for the past whatever number of years. Yeah. Like, it's just not rigged. I don't know what else to say.
I mean, you think about the fact that, yeah, I mean, how it happened. I mean, obviously we understand the narrative of it, but just mathematically of that, they won a tiebreaker with Chicago, right? To get the spot that they did. And
well, the tiebreaker was rigged, Leo. They rigged a coin flip.
Right. So what's funny about that tiebreaker that they won was that Chicago was a one number that was away from, you know, who would have won the lottery had it not been the last number been Dallas's number. And so it's just kind of like, you know, the optics of it. But again, yeah, I'll go back to the fact that, look, Ryan, next year, if the Los Angeles Lakers somehow are awarded Paolo Banchero by the Magic and the Magic win the lottery with a 3% chance and they draft AJ DeBonta or whatever his name is, we got to have a conversation at that point, because whichever team is sending their superstar, young superstar, to LA or a major market winning lottery will be a little bit worrisome. But yeah, you talked a little bit about the East being a dumpster fire. I mean, the Sixers, I mean, them getting the number three pick, I mean, they jumped up two spots, but more importantly, they didn't fall down two spots to lose their pick. That's significant in the fact that it sucks because you're rewarding the Sixers for bad process, you know, pun intended, with Joel Embiid kind of, you know, sacrificing himself to
at least they were trying
MVP.
To at least
they
were trying
to win. They were trying,
they were
to,
trying
win,
to
yeah.
win until their season was very clearly over.
Yeah, derailed by a bunch of injuries, and so they're kind of rewarded for, again, you know, signing Paul George to, you know, pretty close to max, I think, extension, and Embiid to a dubious extension as well too. So I'm not saying that Philly's going to profit that much, but it just kind of sucks that it wasn't a team that was kind of further trying to rebuild than the Sixers are. Charlotte, again, they fall down to number four. They had a chance. They were one of the worst three worst records. The Jazz, again, you kind of have to laugh a little bit. I mean, again, I understand that the Jazz's top lottery pick was not the Timberwolves pick that they're getting from us. But the Jazz, again, fall down to number five. They missed their chance at a blue chip prospect coming out again, or at least a top pick coming in.
Yeah, overall tanking was not rewarded. All the top teams lost.
And they've like the all Jazz, fell down to 4, 5, and 6. Yeah,
the Jazz especially, Wizards. Like the past 3 years, I think have been kind of despicable. Like the 2 seasons before this one, they had like a solid team that was like winning more than their talent should, and they gutted it. Thank you, Mike Conley and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, but they gutted it so that they could start losing games. And then this year they're like, well, we're not even giving you guys a chance to win any games, and just continue to gut their roster. And I get that, like, I'm not even saying that was the wrong move for them, but like, I'm not going to feel bad for you when you tank out of the out of the top four.
Yeah, so not too much more news kind of moving down from there. Everything else pretty much kind of lined up as we expected. That, you know, obviously we had the big jump from Dallas and the big jump from San Antonio. And Philly got a little bit of a jump as well to keep their pick. But yeah, I mean, the Spurs, I mean, you can color them, you know, the second winner after the Mavs, not just for having number two, but they obviously still have the 14th pick that they got from the DeJounte Murray trade. So they have 2 and 14 going to this draft, and they have a lot of young talent, and they're most likely probably, I would assume, be packaging some of them for a notable player. But yeah, it was kind of crazy. It was a crazy day. You know, all in all, I don't know if we have the time to go into Boston Celtics, but again, you did mention Jason Tatum going down, which sucks for the Celtics. You know, good for the Knicks in terms of their playoff chances or championship chances. Cat, you know, had a pretty good game today as well too, so I was happy to see him play well, despite some foul trouble as usual. So yeah, I mean, they're up 3-1 and most likely looking at perhaps the Pacers, who are also up 3-1, and Donovan Mitchell getting an MRI on his ankle, and the Cavs really reel in there.
Yeah, it looks like East Finals are going to be Cavs and Knicks, barring some crazy thing. Yeah. The Cavs might, I don't know, I think it seems like the Cavs and the Celtics, especially if Tatum is, you hope it's not the worst case scenario, but obviously it looked like at the very least, his playoffs might be over, especially if they lose game five. But especially if the Nuggets are able to beat the Thunder. I thought they probably missed their opportunity when they weren't able to close out game four. But I mean, if the Nuggets win, like, the Wolves have as good a chance as any is to win this title. I mean, the favorite right now is OKC. It's hard to disagree with that at this point, but the Wolves have as good a chance as any.
The Nuggets are taking it to the Thunder too. I mean, they're not laying down. And so, you know, we'll see how that series plays out. I mean, it's 2-2, but yeah, I mean, I think the Wolves, if I remember correctly, I mean, the Wolves, did they sweep the Nuggets this year in the regular season?
They did. I'm not sure how much that, all with Michael Malone as coach. So I'm not even sure. Right.
And then how many times did they beat the Thunder this year? At least twice, right? Is it two or three times?
Two and two, and those games mean even less because the Wolves. I think three of the four came when the Wolves like basically had no one, and then they lost a game in New Year's Eve.
I mean, you never want to take too much from regular season. But you think about how the Wolves have performed, though, just in general, again, just within this year. I mean, is there any other team that would feel more comfortable going against the Thunder or the Nuggets in the West, right? I mean, you know,
here's what I'll say about the Thunder. I mean, if the Wolves are going to struggle with the Warriors defense, they got another thing coming with the Thunder defense.
Right.
My overarching thing with the Thunder is they are very, very good. Probably, I shouldn't even say, but they're the best team in the West. But as far as 68 win teams that have the best point differential in the history of the sport go, they are very beatable given those facts. But the fact that they won 68 games and have the best point differential basically in the history of the sport tells you that they are a very, very good team, basically. Best defense. Their defense might be better than the Wolves last year, and their offense is top five, top three. So,
we'll see.
But the Wolves have a lot more playoff experience than them. This Denver series is probably the first one. Unfortunately, I thought their down the stretch play of Game Four was impressive. It was like the first, like, when you talk about their like poise in these games, which I would have doubted they could have done. Like, they're down 2-1. In a game four, and they're losing game four, and they were able to come back and win. But I think they are beatable, but obviously the Wolves would be underdogs and probably somewhat sizable ones at that.
Yeah. So we'll see. Yeah. I mean, we have two more days. Well, one day off technically, and then we come back. The Wolves do play back at home in Target Center. Hopefully trying to close out their first playoff series since God knows when at home. I think ever dating back to 2004, probably. But they do play at 8:30 at Target Center. So it is ready to go.
8:30 Central.
Yes. I'm working for you. I try to think Central for y'all. So I'm in Pacific, but 8:30 Central for y'all. So yeah, it'll be exciting. Hopefully the Wolves can close it at home. Again, hopefully all of you who are local, try to attend the game. If you can't, pack the house, you know, be loud, and let's send Jimmy home. Let's send Jimmy home. Right.
Yeah. You know, like the stereotype, the like Americans don't know other languages. We all expect people to know English. The time zone things is kind of like basically like all of our Canis stuff, and obviously it makes sense. Like we're the most of the it's a Wolves podcast, it's a Wolves website, but like and my day job is the same way, where I work with a lot of people from across the country, but we just do everything in Central Time and kind of force everyone to
world revolves bend, around Minnesota, yeah.
bend to us at least like with the work I do. So it is funny to just kind of think about the time zones, and
yeah,
I never have to adjust my thinking, but. Yeah, Wednesday night, Wolves, the Wolves will still be heavily favored if they end up disastrously losing game five, but it's, to me, game five, if they want to make the finals, it's must game win is probably over the top, but game five
that's
will
the
give
one
them
to do it, though. That's the one
game
to
five
do
will give them a much better shot, and it'll give them the rest advantage by at least a couple days over whoever their opponent is, if not four. Multiple days,
close like, to a week probably.
It'll be an important game. Like we've kind of said, the Wolves don't have to play their A+ game. C- probably gets it done, just like a college course. You get a C-, that's a pass. That's probably where the Wolves are at, assuming Curry isn't healthy or playing. Big game. Andrew and I will be on, one of us live, or both will be on after that game from Target Center, hoping for. First closeout game at Target Center in 21 years since KG was up on the scorers table.
Let's go, baby. We could do this.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you on Wednesday.
All right, get home. Drive safe.
Go Wolves.